Support for The Common comes from Davis Malm. Their tax attorneys take the time to understand your unique goals and find the most cost-effective ways to accomplish them, distilling complex tax laws down to clear choices so you can make the best decisions. DavisMalm.com. DavisMalm.com.
Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it. Because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Simone, what's up, man?
Hey, bro. Good to be here again.
Oh, man. Always great to have you. So listen, you're on the show pretty often, but you never have been on the show to talk about a climate piece.
Right.
Which is what you come to us with today.
There comes a time when we all must talk about climate.
We have to. We have to. You've been looking into why this winter, the one we're living right now, feels a little different from what we think of as the traditional Boston winter. So tell me, how did you come to this story?
Yeah, I mean, it feels freaky to me this winter, having grown up, you know, four decades in the Boston area. I was having a conversation with my mom just a few days ago. She's 73 years old. She lived her whole life in the Northeast. And I said, are we going to go this whole winter without having to get out the snowblower or even shovel for that matter? You know, oh, my God. Like, that would be a first. And I said, would that be a first for you? Do you ever remember a winter where you didn't have to shovel or get out the snowblower, or when we didn't have any major blizzards? And she said, no, I don't remember that. Mm. And so as a person who covers housing, Celtics from time to time, politics, I was attracted to do this piece about this winter, and it ended up becoming a climate change story, for sure.
Yeah. You know, I bought a new winter coat, right, in preparation for the cold weather we were supposed to get. But it seems like the days where, you know, you really need your coat and you got to bundle up and everything like that, you know, those days didn't really happen too often this season. So tell me, how bad is it?
You really have to break it down based on, first of all, where we are. So, you know, if you go up to northern Maine, for example, they're actually experiencing temperatures below average. If you go out to Worcester, you know, just like 45 minutes from Boston to the west, you have the least snowy winter on record. Here in Boston, it doesn't even crack the top 10, either in terms of least snowy or warmest, right? It's up there, but it's like number 11 or 12. But what really makes this winter stand out, for me anyway, is the lack of snow accumulation. And I think that's happening for a number of reasons, but the one that stands out most is the fact that we've had above freezing temperatures on average. So typically in this area, we have temperatures between 29 and 30 degrees average. And this winter, they're above 33. So in many occasions, it will snow and the ground's not frozen. And so the snow just turns to water and goes right back into the earth. Because of a number of factors, we are getting some snow. It's just as soon as it falls, it disappears.
Well, break down why that should be concerning to us.
When you start talking to the people who follow weather trends over time, they see this as like it's becoming the new norm, you know, that the climate that I knew growing up as a kid in New England, when it always snowed, when we had to, you know, jump over the snowbank on the side of the road to avoid the plow trucks from running us over, and where we would get all kinds of school days over the winter. And, you know, all of these things that I associate with winter during my childhood, that's just not going to be the case anymore, which isn't to say we're not going to get walloped on occasion. We're actually supposed to see much more precipitation during the winters in New England. It's just that with the temperatures warming up, that snow, it's going to turn into, you know, freezing rain and the kind of slush and messy mix that we know of, like for late winter, we're going to be seeing all winter long. Emma Gilda's game is a climate adaptation expert with the Nature Conservancy. Listen to the way she described our future winters.
As New Englanders, we go sledding. We have snow days. And all of that is just changing who we are. You know, we bundle up and we wear boots and we have too many jackets. And we shovel out our spot and fight over a parking spot. And all of these things are just little pieces of what it means to be a New Englander.
So we're thinking about how these warmer winters and the lack of snow cover might impact our ski season or, hell, our future, right? But this isn't only impacting people. Wildlife is taking a hit too, right?
Yeah, look, like, I'm no ecologist, but people are highly adaptable. Like, if it's a few degrees warmer or colder, for most of us, it doesn't make a difference. But for the species that have evolved over thousands of years to adapt to this specific climate, it could mean they can no longer exist here. So I visited this place called Drumlin Farm, which is a property just west of Boston in Lincoln, run by Mass Audubon, and interviewed this woman named Tia Pinney. She's a naturalist, and she's been doing this for decades. So she's really in tune with the wildlife that they know out there and how different creatures like mice and moles and voles sort of require snow cover in order to do their thing. So there's this zone between the snow and the ground called the subnivian zone, a term I'd never heard of. But it turns out there's all these little creatures that depend on that area to protect them from predators on one hand, also to protect them from very cold weather, because ironically, the snow is like an insulator for the creatures that live under the snow cover. So it's not like this winter is going to lead to a die-off in any specific creatures, you know, that we know of. But over time, if we continue to see winters like this with little to no snow cover for an entire winter, it could affect these populations. They could start moving further north, or the populations could start to suffer. There's so many different angles to this. It's just mind-boggling when you start to think about it.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more from Simone.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. This all sounds very worrisome, especially when we think about the average temperature being above freezing, which in my mind indicates this is a longer term problem, right? Does it have to be this way? Is there anything we could do to slow this down? Did any experts give you any sense of a solution?
Yeah, well, look, the way climate scientists, the way they develop their models is based on different emissions scenarios. You know, are we going to cut into emissions? Or are we going to continue emitting at the same level we are now? And that will determine how much warming there is and what kind of winters we have. But what it seems from the people I spoke to, basically our winters are going to be akin to the winters of people down to the south. Daryl, you're from New Jersey, right?
Yeah, South Jersey.
Okay. Well, it's funny because I actually asked this researcher up at the University of New Hampshire named Elizabeth Burakowski, who was originally from New Jersey but grew up in New Hampshire. I asked her what we can expect our winters to be like, kind of if this current winter is the new norm.
What we grew up with is now changing to a climate that's much more like, say, like northern New Jersey. And I don't know about you, but I'm not one to plan winter vacations in northern New Jersey. I can say this, I was born in New Jersey, so I'm allowed to say that.
That's interesting because it seems like the winters in Jersey are warmer than they used to be.
Right. So the winters in New Jersey are going to be more akin to winters to the south of New Jersey, you know? And as things warm up, it's like you have to go further and further north to get the kind of winters that you and I had, you know, growing up as kids. And getting back to your initial question, Daryl, about whether there's something we can do about it, I asked Elizabeth Burakowski this question. The way I phrased it was like under a dream climate response, if the nations of the world join forces and everybody agrees that we have to do everything to reverse the climate problem, would there be a way to reverse this warming trend and help preserve winter? And yeah, she says it is technically possible.
You know, like if you are dreaming and thinking about every single option that we have in terms of policy, in terms of technology, I think it's possible. I think if we continue to invest in technology that can pull carbon out of the atmosphere through carbon sequestration, carbon capture and storage, we need to bring carbon dioxide and other carbon, you know, like other greenhouse gas concentrations down in the atmosphere. And that will help us a lot to preserve winter.
But in reality, you know, however feasible or not that might be, she was saying the most important thing that we can do as individuals is to have conversations, to talk about climate change like we are right now, because it's those kind of conversations, in her view, that will lead to changes at a more broad level.
Well, I guess that's why we're here, right?
Absolutely.
We got to have these conversations. And so thank you for bringing this to us, Simone.
Yeah, man.
I'm worried, but enlightened.
I feel the same way, bro. Thank you for having me today.
That's WBUR reporter Simone Rios. And that's our show for today. Thank you so, so much for listening to The Common. Listen, tell us how this winter has been different from the winters of the past. Hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at WBURTheCommon. You can also send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.